go to everydaynovelist.com/support to join the madness.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 657.
Today we have another question from Jason, the high school student, who is asking vital questions he needs answers to in order to complete his school project and triumphantly finish his first novel. Jason asks,
how could one write a conflict that really grips the reader, such as the fight at the end of Fellowship of the Ring or the thrilling ending from Pulp Fiction?
I am not sure whether with Fellowship of the Ring you mean the book or the film, but I'm going to guess you mean the film. Frankly, the conflict at the end of the book is more gripping, though it's less action-y. In either case, the trick to both of these is that there are many sets of conflicts going on at the same time, and many levels of them. Break Fellowship of the Ring down. You have Boromir's war within himself between temptation and nobility. You have the orcs attempting to interdict and abduct the hobbits to take the ring back to Saruman. You have the Fellowship separated by geography because they're milling around waiting for Frodo to make his decision about what to do. You have the suspense over what Frodo's going to do. Is he going to go on? Is he going to go back? Is he going to take the ring for himself? What's he going to do? And you've got Gollum stalking them the whole time, which doesn't come out very well in the film, but is certainly a present lurking threat in the books. All of these levels of conflict explode together in one nexus where all of the things are going on at the same time, and every physical conflict has extra emotional levels to it. The physical conflicts are embodiments of deeper emotional and spiritual conflicts going on within the group, within the characters, and everything like that. The same thing is happening in Pulp Fiction at the very end, in the robbery of the, and the very beginning, but the very end, the robbery of the restaurant. So you've got Pumpkin and Honey Bunny, or Ringo and Yolanda, who are trying to level up in their career, and they've got the robbery on the line, and it's obviously not just a career for them, but it's also kind of their kink. You know that they're going to go home and have sex afterwards and have a fantastic time, because they obviously find the whole process extremely arousing. Then you have the argument going on between Vince and Jules, which is almost the opposite from the discussion that's going on in the lead-up between Pumpkin and Honey Bunny. Vince and Jules are arguing about whether it's a career worth continuing and whether to get out or to level up. And whereas Pumpkin and Honey Bunny, or the robbery is bringing them closer together, the subject of robberies and heists are splitting Jules and Vince apart. So you have one relationship falling apart, you have one relationship coming together. Those two things come into this explosive situation with guns and the threat of death and robbery and lots of noise and violence. And at the same time, have the suspense issue where Pumpkin and Honey Bunny don't know that Vince and Jules are badass motherfuckers. Or, well, I suppose technically only Jules is the bad motherfucker, but that's a whole other thing. They don't know that these guys are very seasoned career criminals, and that they're in the restaurant, and that they're armed, and that they're carrying cargo that's very valuable to them. So you know that the moment they stand up on that table and say, okay, everybody, this is a robbery, stuff is going to go really, really badly. So you as the audience have these diverse emotional investments going on as you go into the scene. And because you've seen the first part of the scene at the beginning, you know that the robbery is going to come. And so you've got that ramping tension because you don't know what's going to happen. Are Vince and Jules just going to blow these guys away? Are these guys going to get the drop on Vince and Jules and kill them and render this whole movie we've been through with them and their character journeys meaningless? Well, we know they're not going to get the drop on Vince because we've already seen him die, but we're not aware of that in the scene, at least not on a conscious level. So we've got already the relational stakes, diverse relational stakes. We've got spiritual stakes, because that's the other thing that's going on. Jules is having his crisis of confidence because he thinks he's witnessed a miracle. And so he's wondering if God isn't calling him to do something different, which of course Vince thinks is nuts. So you've got a religious moment going on at the same time that all this is going on. So you don't know where Jules stands. You know that earlier in the day, he'd have just killed these two people and gone on with life. But now you don't know. There's a massive degree of uncertainty coming in here. And when he gets the drop on Ringo, Pumpkin, everything turns upside down on its head, and you've still got Vince in the bathroom, because Vince is always in the bathroom in this movie. You've still got Vince in the bathroom, and you know that he at some point is going to come out and screw up whatever it is that Jules has going here, where he's trying to get his wallet back and give Ringo the word of the Lord, so to speak. And meanwhile, Honey Bunny, who a second before was massively sexually aroused, riding really high on power, is suddenly going to pieces and peeing all over the place, or just about to pee all over the place, because Ringo, the person who matters obviously way more to her than we ever even imagined at the beginning of the scene, is staring down the barrel of a gun. Suddenly we see a vulnerability and a depth in their relationship that we had no idea was there. Because it looked at the beginning like they were just thrill seekers rather than very deeply invested and bonded partners. But it is now obvious that that's the case. So that ramps up the tension again, adds more layers to the stakes. And then Vince comes out, and Jules has to control him, keep him from shooting Honey Bunny while he's talking to Ringo. Every couple of seconds, the stakes ratchet up, and they also ratchet out. Every time there is an elevation in the tension, there is also a diversification in the layers of things that are going on. Until finally, the end of the scene, with all these guns and shouting and whatnot, the end of the scene, all of it comes down to a weird moral question that doesn't quite make sense except in the context of the world. But that diffuses all the tension without letting the audience go the way an explosion would. So the grip keeps going all the way through the first end credit, and that's why when this came out in the theater, though you're too young to remember this because you weren't born yet, in the theater, nobody got up. Very rare that you're in a film where the end credits roll and nobody gets up. But nobody got up in the theater at the end of this film. Everybody just kind of sat there. You know, there were the applause and everything, but everyone just kind of sat there taking in what they'd just seen because they were all still stuck in that final scene. And I kid you not, every time I've watched it on video with someone, either me or the someone I'm watching it with have had that same reaction. They just have to sit there and take in the music and the credits because they haven't quite finished processing what they've just seen. That's what makes the endings of those movies and those stories so gripping. You don't just have the ratcheting tension, the raising of the stakes at every possible turn, but you also have a deepening of the stakes. As the scene goes on, more is revealed to you about how important this is, not just how dangerous it is. More kinds of jeopardy are revealed to you at the same time as greater forms of the existing jeopardy are revealed to you. And the conflict, this one and this part is particularly important. The conflict reveals things about the characters that you had not previously seen, either in depth or in breadth. The conflict shows you things about the characters that you would otherwise not have seen. Even if you suspected they were there, even if you'd had glimpses of them, you would not have a true sense of the metal of this character except through the lens of the conflict. That's what makes those stories so gripping, and that's how you do it. You have multiple layers of stakes that are revealed gradually through the unfolding of the scene, and you have multiple levels of tension and danger that are ratcheted up progressively through the scene. And you have some of those kinds of tension and stakes involve showing the characters for who they are in a way that we haven't previously seen. And if it's really good, like Pulp Fiction, for example, it will also show the audience, either by reflection or by their reaction to what's going on, it will show them something about themselves that they either didn't know or weren't quite ready to look at otherwise. That's how you do it. Resist the temptation to go for the easy answer. Make sure that your characters have to work to get through their crises, climaxes, and conflicts. And a lot of the rest of this stuff will start to creep in naturally because life is complex, and deep down we all know that. Thanks very much for sending it in, Jason. I hope you have a fantastic time completing your novel. This completes the student question series this time, unless Jason sends more in. And I will see all of you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian, and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners. Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.